Good evening, citizens. Welcome to Neusatz, a town in the marshland behind the ancient fortress where fog clings to the rooftops and the past is never truly gone. In each episode, we pull back the veil and unearth a forgotten story from the town that once was. Tonight we ascend the wooded slopes of Kamenica, where the trees lean like old men and stone lions guard a house long surrendered to silence. This is the Marzibányi Karácsonyi Castle, a place where enlightenment once bloomed, and later, where mercy made its last stand. Its walls remember music, revolution, and the laughter of orphans, but its name has faded from the city's breath, left behind like a glove in a drawer no one opens. Join us as we step beyond the broken gate and into the echoing chambers of the castle that time forgot.
In the long memory of Sirmia, few shadows linger darker than those cast by the Ottoman retreat. They left not peace, but a raw and irritable void, land rich with potential, yet aching from conquest. It was a place of ghostly echoes, where the past lingered like ash caught in the wind. The Habsburgs, ever sharpening their blades of influence, saw not a wasteland, but a canvas for ambition. Land became spoils, distributed like favors at a royal feast, the recipients speaking not just Latin in the courts, but steel in the fields of war. And into this fractured world stepped Count Lőrinc Marzibányi. The year was 1758, and Lőrinc, a Magyar noble, proud and deliberate, took possession of the Kamenica estate. But he was no mere caretaker. No, he carried with him the vision of a cartographer, mapping not borders, but futures. The hills, silent for centuries, soon bore new life under his hand. Vineyards crept across the slopes, like green veins bringing vitality. A house, stoic and regal, rose from barren earth. And at the heart of it all, a hospital. Less a building, more a quiet rebellion against despair and disease. Lőrinc did not build for survival alone. His mission seeped deeper. Schools, humble yet defiant, lit the first sparks of knowledge in young eyes. Churches stood like sentinels, their bells a proclamation that the Enlightenment had found its way, even here, to the edge of empire. Grain, handed not to kings but to farmers, became a whisper of stability in a land still trembling from years of war. He was, in essence, a civilizer. He wove the threads of enlightenment into the stark fabric of the region, his reforms not gaudy nor overwhelming, but enduring. Brick by brick, harvest by harvest, he reshaped Kamenica into more than an estate. It became an idea, a symbol of what the future could hold. Yet even as he worked, his gaze seemed fixed beyond his lifetime, as though he built not for himself, but for those who would come after. And it is here that we begin to see the emergence not only of a family's legacy, but of a philosophy, one that would find its next voice, its next heartbeat, in the mind of his son, István. Legacy is seldom a gilded inheritance. More often, it is an alchemy of ambition, a distillation of blood and ideals. To Count István Marzibányi, the estate at Kamenica was never merely property. It was an unfinished manuscript handed down in trust, its chapters outlined in his father's vineyards and hospitals, but waiting for him to fill with a new narrative. István was a man of curious contradictions, both mystic and mathematician, philosopher and pragmatist. Serving as an advisor to Maria Theresa, his gaze was as much on the stars as it was on the foundations of government beneath his feet. For him, art was no indulgence. It was a civic duty, a map through the chaos of human endeavor. It is said that he spent much of his fortune not in self-splendor, but in pursuit of what he called the immortal relics of the past. Books, medals, the shattered remnants of history, all collected not to hoard, but to understand. His museum, one of the first of its kind, was built in silence, as though he anticipated the questions generations yet born might one day ask. In 1797, with careful hands and an eye for symmetry, he laid the groundwork for a new house. A place less to boast and more to inspire, its marble bones were measured with the precision of a cosmic rhythm. But fate, in its indifference, granted him 12 years, just enough to sketch the outline, leaving the rest to unfinished silence. By the time of his death in 1810, his vision still lingered, stark and incomplete. What István left behind was not merely a structure of stone and plaster. It was a call to knowledge, a gesture towards the Enlightenment ideals that he revered. His house, like his life's work, stood poised between the certainties of the past and the whispers of an uncertain future. Yet Kamenitz itself would not rest in stillness for long. Amid the legacy of István's intellect and philosophy, another Marchabani would rise, one who saw not only what the future could dream, but what it could build. Legacies bloom in many shapes, some in libraries of forgotten wisdom, others in architecture that defies time itself. But in the hands of Count Márton Marchabani, Kamenitz became neither philosophy nor monument. It became motion, a breathing machine of nature and purpose, each cog turning not for spectacle, but for sustenance. Where his father spoke to the stars, Márton listened to the soil. His was a language of vineyards, whispered in the green slopes of Sirmia, their tendrils climbing not just hills, but history. And as he picked up István's unfinished plans, he did not merely complete them, he reimagined them. The castle grew, as castles often do, but this one stretched outward, as though inviting the sky to stay a while. A north wing reached like an open arm, and beneath its grandeur, a wine cellar burrowed deep, quiet as memory. Yet it was not stone and vine alone that caught Martin's attention. Among his many labors, one came to stand as a symbol of his vision, a garden. Not the rigid formality of clipped hedges and domed gazebos, but an English garden, one of soft disarray and whispered questions. Here, imported trees of distant continents took root, their strange tongues bending to Sirmian winds. Paths wandered like a dreamer's thoughts, interrupted by sculptures that seem to ask who we are, never answering, only watching in pale stone. Somewhere in this orchestration stood Márton himself. At once, farmer and futurist, his days unfolded in the quiet rhythm of sowing and planning, each task a note in a concerto only he could hear. And you see, that rhythm infused everything he touched. He gave the estate not extravagance, but order, an earthly symmetry that hummed beneath the surface. Even the Sphinx, stationed stoically above the Danube, bore not the air of an enigma, but an eternal vigil, its carved eyes seemingly fixated on the horizon, guarding the future. But even this vision, meticulous and inspired, could not keep time at bay. Count Márton Marchabani's life, like the gardens he planted, was destined to flourish only briefly. He left the estate too soon, his legacy incomplete, his dream replanting itself in the hands of new heirs. And with his departure, Kamenitsa stood at the edge of a new era, readying itself for opulence over purpose. Opulence is a kind of language, its words carved in stone, its poetry spoken in gold leaf and lacquered wood. And with the marriage of Countess Maria Marchabani to Count Guido Caraccioni, the Kamenitsa estate began to speak this language fluently, each corner, each corridor, softened by the echo of art and elegance. Where the Marchabanis brought reform, the Caraccionis brought ritual. Guido Caraccioni, a man haloed in empire's smoke and shadow, stepped into this legacy as not merely a caretaker, but an auteur. He saw in Kamenitz not a future to shape, but a past to resurrect and gild. In his vision, history was not something to be built. It was to be performed, its scenes staged amidst the hills and the Danube's quiet murmur. The castle itself grew under his hand, but not in practical dimensions. Guido favored the symbolic, the artistic. Egyptian sphinxes crouched in the gardens, stoic guardians borrowed from ancient sands. A man-made lake mirrored the changing skies, its surface broken only by the breath of imported trees learning to drink from Sirmia's stubborn clay. He did not see boundaries or borders. The estate's language became one of timelessness, drawing from Pompeii, Egypt, and distant lands he would never step foot in. Nostalgia hung in the air like incense, the heavy sweetness of a time and place that might never have truly existed. But Kamenica's grandeur did not end with stone and soil. There was music, or so they say. And here, the name surfaces. Franz Liszt. That haunted genius of the piano, draped in shadows as much as light, is said to have performed within the estate's gilded drawing room. Imagine his fingers brushing the keys, conjuring melodies that curled upward like smoke, tangling with the wisteria, and trailing long after the last notes faded. The archers caught these whispers, held them in place, an eternal performance offered to an audience of echoes. Yet for all its grandeur, for all Guido's dreams of a perennial monument, the estate was transforming into something less tangible. It was becoming an artifact, not of function, but of form. The vineyards remained, the walls stood, but their spirit shifted from sustenance to spectacle. Kamenica had become a theatre, its players immortalized in marble and bronze, its stage illuminated by the flicker of candlelight reflected off crystal chandeliers. Time, for all its swiftness, is rarely sudden. The death of the old ways, of nobility gilded and grand, came not as a tempest, but as a long and lingering dusk. In Kamenica, the decline whispered through the halls rather than roared. The grand estates, once alive with music and motion, fell quiet, not with shame, but with irrelevance. After Guido Carazzoni left this world, his sons inherited more than the castle's keys. They inherited its stillness. Gennu and Camillo Carazzoni walked among the relics of a time that no longer fit the world outside its gates. The empire that had gilded their family name crumbled, first in whispered treaties, then in the clamor of trenches, and finally in the silent scattering of dust. What use is a stage without an audience, a chandelier without the light? The estate lingered, as though caught between breaths, its splendor fading at the edges. The banners, you can almost see them, even they eventually succumbed to time's indifference. And the wine, once sanctified and celebrated, soured in barrels untouched by priests' blessings. Kamenica, for all its carved majesty, found itself a house without purpose, its spirit retreating into obsolescence. When, at last, the land fell not to heirs but to lawyers, it did so quietly. No revolution stormed these gates, no scandal rattled its foundation, just ink, signatures, and silence. And by 1920, the banners of nobility were folded away altogether. The kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes carved the land once reserved for aristocratic legacy into parcels for the landless, names changed, paths redirected. This was not the end of a story, no. It was a transformation, a fading echo of an era that no longer had a place in the present. Kamenica became less a symbol of power and more an artifact, a mirror reflecting not ideals or grandeur, but the void left by their absence. Yet inside this quiet, lying almost forgotten, were the seeds of something new. Sometimes, you see, it is in the vacuum left by nobility that a different legacy begins to take root. And so, with the fall of nobility, Kamenica stood in waiting, its walls silent witnesses to a history whose echoes grew dimmer with each passing year. But just as the dawn follows the darkest night, a new story was to be written, one of compassion, of renewal, of healing. It was in the ashes of war and the turbulence of a shattered world that Yelena Lozanich and John Frothingham arrived. Yelena, a daughter of science, her heart beating with the rhythms of diplomacy and hope. And John, an American who had stitched his name into history with the stripes of the Red Cross. What brought them here, to Kamenica, was not ambition or legacy, but love, love for humanity in its most vulnerable state, or where others might have seen a relic encumbered with ghosts of the past. They saw potential, a sanctuary. The chandeliers, once alight with the glitter of aristocratic feasts, now shone above rows of bunk beds. Children's laughter spilled into the halls, where once the strains of Franz Liszt's piano echoed. You see, they didn't restore Kamenica to its former grandeur. They lifted it into something greater, something living. In 1929, they purchased the castle, but they did not claim it as their own. It became a republic of care. The orphans of war, children who had seen too much of the world's cruelty, found refuge within its walls. Yelena ran the household like a force of nature, letters flowing from her hand to allies across continents. She assembled a community, a tapestry of educators and dreamers, weaving hope where despair had once lingered. And though history often etches John's name into the stone plaques of heritage, it was Yelena, fluent in the language of resilience, who orchestrated this symphony of healing. They did not merely inhabit the castle, they animated it. They turned it into a living, breathing monument to the principles of care and connection. Sometimes, it seems, nobility is not in blood or title, but in the endless act of giving, of mending. So, the story of Kamenica does not end in ruins or decadence. Its soul was reborn, not in the gilded halls of dynasties, but in the quiet moments when a child slept peacefully for the first time in years. It breathed through the lessons recited in soft voices, the lullabies sung to the hum of history itself. And there, beneath the vaulted ceilings that had witnessed centuries of ambition, tragedy, and transformation, the world saw that even stone can learn to nurture. When we look back at Kamenica's story, we find not a static memorial, but an evolving testament to the enduring power of humanity, even in its simplest, most unpretentious forms. And with that, friends, our journey through the bones of Kamenica comes to its poetic close. Thank you for traveling with me through time, through ambition, and through love. On that note, we'll see each other next time. Until then, let history keep whispering its secrets into the night.
Thank you for listening to another episode. Stay tuned for more forgotten stories, hidden places, and voices that time tried to silence. Until next time, keep your eyes open and your steps quiet. And remember, you are not welcome here.